Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the talk show, Uplifting Communities. And we're presenting a Council of Elders program, and it's ran by Mr. Jensen Brooks. And, you know, we got a lot of people on the panel today, and we're going to get started. And the reason for that is because this is going to be an exciting day for you guys. So just bear with us. We got a lot of people going to be talking. People going to be getting very good information, and they're going to be giving out very good information. So with that said, I'm going to pass it on to Mr. Jensen Brooks. Go ahead, Mr. Brooks.
Good morning. Good morning. Hello, everybody. My name is Jensen Brooks. And I want to welcome and thank everybody for calling in this week to the Council of Elders program on Uplifting Communities. And I want to thank you, John Brown, for giving us this opportunity. And for you new listeners, let me share with you the purpose of the Council of Elders. The purpose is of the Council of Elders is for older people, elders, if you will, to give advice, counsel, and life experience to younger people. Advice that can help them navigate successfully through life, deal with issues, and avoid some of the pitfalls that can affect everyone. The concept is based historically on African culture, where elders in the community had council members to help guide tribe members, settle disputes, etc. Young people, you're especially invited to call in today. Now, my dream is to have a Council of Elders group or organization in every community in America, and for them to be known about in the community so that people could have an opportunity to get advice from elders about their concerns. But it first starts with a single group, so I'm establishing a group of elders here in the Sacramento, California area, and I'd like to have about 10 volunteers. Once we get enough volunteers, we can go to youth centers, juvenile halls, boys and girls clubs, and churches, etc. We can also be available to young adults as well. Sometimes they need advice on how to raise kids, how to get along in their careers, marriages, etc. Moving forward, the Council of Elders is an effort to bridge the gap between young people and elders. The younger generation today and the older generation should start to merge. Now, with that, let me say that I am really excited about the program this week. The reason for my excitement is because we have some very special guests on the program today, and I'll let them introduce themselves in just a minute. The reason they're special is because they are the people that elders want to talk to and listen to. And when they told me what they wanted to talk about today, these young folks, I can say that I was pleasantly surprised, because what they wanted to talk about was saving, investing, their careers, finances, retirement planning. And I said, wow, people in their 20s want to know about stuff like that. And I'm sure a lot of you elders can say to yourselves, I wish I would have listened to a little financial information when I was their age. And so with that, I'm going to let our panel introduce themselves, starting with Tyler.
Hello, everyone. This is Tyler White. I'm from Baltimore, Maryland, by way of Natchez, Mississippi, and I'm a dual degree engineering graduate of Clark Atlanta University and North Carolina A&T State University, with a degree, a bachelor's degree in mathematics and a bachelor's degree of architectural engineering, respectively.
Okay, Lucius?
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lucius McCahan III, resident of Durham, North Carolina. I have a background in civil engineering. I'm currently working as a transportation engineer for the state of North Carolina. I received my bachelor's from North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University. And I'm glad to be on the panel this morning or this afternoon.
Okay. Next.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Frank Adams. I'm from Chicago, Illinois, born and raised. I attended Clark Atlanta University for physics, and I also attended North Carolina A&T for mechanical engineering. And I currently work for Lockheed Martin Corporation here in Marietta as a hardware engineer. Nice to meet you guys.
Thank you, thank you. Tyler, is there anyone else with you?
No, that's all for right now.
Okay, okay. Then go ahead, Cedric.
Hi, good morning, all. This is Cedric Bissett. I was in Sacramento. I started in Sacramento. All through middle school, high school, grew up there. Went over to North Carolina A&T. Got my bachelor's in double E, electrical engineering. Then continued on to Purdue, got my master's in mechanical in electrical and computer engineering, and then headed over to NASA and been working as an instrumentation engineer there for about 17 years now. I'm actually working with people with Lockheed Martin on a project right now in Marietta, so I'd like to talk with Frank. This elders council is already working out, connecting the dots, so... Right.
Cedric, I'm from a little town in Alabama, and one of the things that they said on the streets down there is, and I'll put it in colloquialism, they say it ain't what you know, it's who you know. So a lot of times,
that's right.
Who you know can be very helpful in your career. Now, one thing when they told me they went to North Carolina A&T, you were the first person I thought about. And then after the show, I try to hook you guys up so you can communicate a little bit more. Okay, next we have Mr. Ron Gilmore.
Good morning. I am just excited to be here and joining with you today. My background is in theology. First of all, I've been in the church over 40 years now, ordained minister. I am an elder the Progressive Church of God in Christ here in Sacramento, California. I was raised in the Berkeley area, educated in the Bay Area there, majoring in biological sciences. However, I ended up in the financial service industry. I have over 40 years in the industry, and I am an insurance agent. I specialize in retirement planning, and certainly have a wonderful time. So, again, I'm excited to be here and looking forward to the Elder of Council of Elders and everything that we're sharing today.
All right, all right. I believe that's all the members of our panel today. I have a question, though. We're going to be talking about some of the things that you guys said you wanted to talk about, savings, budgeting, buying, retirement planning. And I have to commend you, gentlemen, for wanting to know stuff like that, because you know life can go by pretty fast, and if you don't plan, you can end up in your 60s and 70s, you know, just as broke as you were in your 20s. And so I have to commend you for wanting to know things like that. But I have a quick question though before we get started. As elders, we want to understand better ways to communicate with younger folks like yourselves so that we can be more helpful. So I'd like to ask the young men, in your childhood and up until now, can you think of anyone who had a positive influence on you, whether it was a parent, teacher, and what ways did they use in talking to you or communicating with you to help guide you? And so, anyone can chime in on that.
This is Tyler speaking. I kind of have an old soul, just because I was raised mostly by my great grandparents, which not a lot of people are able to say they were able to even meet their great grandparents in this day. But so for me, like, I kind of grew up with them. So like, their friends, I came into their life about 65, I believe it was, when I was born, around their age. So growing up with them in their latter part of their retirement years, I was able to connect with them and kind of sort of like what this program is, and they would pour into me what they knew from the family aspect and what being an upstanding person of civilization was and is, that I carry throughout now. For them, it was more so of like, those are my grandparents, so you got to listen to them regardless. So that's how we communicated. But then outside of that, going to school, I would find myself more so talking with my professors and teachers as my friends than actual people my age, just because, like, I grew up around my great-grandparents. So them having friends of 60 and 70 years old, like, those were my friends as well. So I picked up and learned things from elders coming out the womb. So it's natural for me just to communicate and take heed or listen to whatever the elder generation has to say or wish to bestow upon us as the younger generation, just because I feel like I'm already a part of their generation.
What can you think of anything, methods or ways specifically that they kind of coached you in the right way, or any words that they used, or because there's elders listening in on the show, and we're just trying to understand better, you know, how we can influence and communicate better. Anything, any particular tidbit you can give us?
I would say they didn't repeat themselves a lot, but they would take the time to reaffirm that I was learning whatever needed to be learning. So if it was my grandmother and cooking, then she had no choice but to cook. So I would just come and listen up whenever she started cooking and be like, okay, well, I want the vegetables chopped this way, so make sure you chop them this way. And she would just check in to make sure that I was doing it the correct way. And with my grandfather, he was in the construction industry. So if it was, hey, I'm going out to the construction field, I'm leaving here at 5 o'clock in the morning, you better be up. And if I was up, then I was going with him. If I wasn't up, he wasn't about to come and wake me up, or he would only call me once. And so just being able to a little bit of time management on that side, and he'd be like, okay, if you want to get up with me at 5 o'clock in the morning, you can't stay up all night. So I would go take my shower and rush to bed just so I'd be able to hear him call me that one and only time in the morning to head out.
Okay, how about you, Lucius?
Much like Tyler, I was actually able to grow up knowing my great-grandparents. So I guess trickling down the line, they had set expectations for their kids, and my grandparents set expectations for their kids, which would be my parents. And basically just establishing that foundation, it kind of guided me to knowing that I need to respect my elders. So when they're talking, I'm listening. And honestly, what they were saying was, you know, important information. So I'm just taking it all in. I know Tyler personally, and he can tell you that I am a listener. I'm an observer. So I'm really, you know, as I'm growing up, going through the years, just listening and taking it all in. I can't think of any specifics at the moment, but outside of family, I've had, like, coaching staff. I was in into athletics, so they were pretty monumental in my growing up process as far as, you know, different morals, like don't quit, be persistent, and persevere through obstacles. Outside of that, I can't really think of any other specifics, but as far as reaching
That's good. You know, be persistent. I know Tyler was talking about be on time.
that was
what other gentleman?
Frank.
I can't think. Frank. Frank.
Yes, sir. This is Frank speaking. Mm-hmm. Growing up in Chicago, I grew up on the South Side, so it was a very humbling experience for me. And I had both of my parents in my life. My dad, you know, he wasn't in the home, but he was always there. And they both made sacrifice to send me to a, you know, all African American black male private school. And before I went, I sort of disagreed with my mom. I was like, Mom, you know, there are, you know, no girls there, you know, I'm not going to be able to do it. So I just, you know, I was like, okay, I'm going to go, you know. And I went, and I loved it, you know, because I had a bunch of, you know, older black men, you know, and these were all black men of high dispositions. And, you know, they were scientists and engineers and, you know, much like Lucius, I had a lot of, you know, coaches and stuff like that and mentors there. So I think just seeing them, you know, in their roles, they sort of encouraged, you know, a lot of the young black men, you know, who was within that institution to branch out and to explore and to be curious, you know, like, you know, go out into the world and explore. But also once you find your passion, to sort of pay it forward. And so that school, you know, and that environment sort of fostered a safe haven. It was a safe haven environment, you know, for a lot of us, you know, young black men attending the school. And I just had a lot of, you know, older black men that I could look up to, you know, and that sort of thrust me into the fields that I'm in today. So.
And what school was that, my brother?
This was Hales Franciscan High School on the south side of Chicago.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much. And Brother Shedrick, you've been working for NASA for quite a while now. What as far as your career and your guidance, what would you tell a young person in these guys' shoes right now? I mean, as far as, you know, furthering their careers and so forth.
Great. I wanted to actually take on the question you had before, too. So before I ask you your question there, I love the fact that everyone's going back to their roots. I believe what got me here is the shoulders and the giants of everyone behind me. So I did not necessarily know my great-grandparents, but they started at the home. And so a lot of my core values and stuff started with my beliefs at home, my Christianity. My mother and father directly guided me through the process and listening to their guidance. As far as specifics, too, when I got to, I don't know if I necessarily had, like, mentors along the way. You always kind of look for someone to pay it forward and to pay it back because you always want to go, you know, look for where you're trying to go. I remember more so different sayings that people had around me, and specifically at A&T. I had two different professors, and they taught me two different things that I passed on. There's an Asian professor I had, and I really didn't understand exactly too much of the concept. It was introduction to engineering, but one thing he said always kept in my heart. It took me years to figure out. He always said, "Learn how to learn," and that was powerful because, you know, we're all in these situations. I learned later that you're trying to get guidance from other people, and you're trying to figure out who can help you and whatnot. And a lot of that's not written. You just got to figure out how for yourself. The education is there, but you have to go get it. And that's what I got from that conversation. The other one is my calculus professor, Dr. Odom, that was at A&T. She had me. You know, I was ace in her class. I took her first class calculus, second and third, and I was just acing through it, had no problems. I got to the third year of calculus, and I started getting hard, I started failing a little bit, getting C's and B's that I wasn't used to. And instead of her telling me, you know, attaboy, it's okay, you can do it, which she did motivate me, she told me, I'm so glad I can see you struggling. And I said, what? You know, I'm not, she said, because now I know you're finally at a point that you're at a breaking point where everything else was too easy for you. You need to be challenged, and that's when you grow and stretch. And so those are kind of the two events that impacted my life and got me here. So on to your actual question. So the things that here so I've been at NASA for 17 years now, and one of the things that I had was book smarts, but not necessarily the the hands-on. And so that was good. And I could say, you know, just be flexible. Just be trainable. Just have, and you guys, all three of you guys, I already see it. You're open-minded, you're thinking, you're listening, you're observing. And just be in the right place at the right time. God's going to direct your path already. You rest assured of that. You just got to be ready and prepared to do so. And so one of the things I learned when I first got in, I was a little – so my background is electrical engineering, but my emphasis really was in software. I could do the hardware, but it didn't really excite me. My first 3 to 5 years at NASA, they put me in doing hardware, doing drawings, doing electrical Bode plots, doing all this stuff. And I took it as, you know, I was kind of bummed. I was like, my strength is in software. Well, the hardware, what I learned is in those 3 years of just digging in and listening, I created relationships left and right, top and bottom. My branch chief, my supervisor, my coworkers, and the techs I was working with, learning how to understand the wiring, how to pick connectors, how to just do that job. And years later, I realized I was building up a weakness in my resume. So I was already strong in software, but now I just brought my hardware skills up to the same level. So I just became super, you know, flexible for everybody. But that was just, that's kind of an upbringing, just taking in the gifts or the challenges that are presented and just doing your best at it, because there's a reason you're doing it. And holding on. And that's been kind of my career path, just taking on knowing what I want to do, just don't take anything, but knowing how it fits in your bigger puzzle and your bigger mission in life.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, let me take this time right here to just drop in for a second. You are listening at Uplifting Communities Talk Show, and we presenting Council of Elders Program. And the founder is Mr. Jansen Brooks. And if you guys want to join in and either ask a question with the panel or elaborate on something, please press 1. And right now, Mr. Jansen, we have a board full. There's a lot of people that press 1. They're trying to get in to ask a question to your panels.
Okay.
But
well,
let me know when you're ready to start letting them in.
Okay. Well, we have Mr. Gilmore, but as we come up, Mr. Gilmore, if they had some questions, you know, financing, well, like that, you know, you can take over. But, yeah, John, let them in right now.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, let's start letting them in. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Malcolm Hughes down in Atlanta, Georgia. I want to hear from the kids, the young people. What do they want to learn about today as far as creating wealth, keeping wealth, how to become financially secure. And one of the things I just want to throw out there is get some financial literacy, guys. Always keep learning. Always invest in yourself, invest in your education, and move forward. But I'd like to hear some questions from them.
This is Frank Adams. And, you know, again, I'm from Chicago, Illinois. How do we buy the block back and keep it within our community rather than just letting, you know, certain groups and developers come in and, you know, buy it and, you know, store it for themselves?
Oh, yeah, Malcolm, you'd have a lot to say about that, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm a CPA by training. But my new passion of mid-year career change is investing in real estate. And so become a real estate investor, and there are plenty of different ways to invest in real estate. I won't get into all of them, but one of the things that used to be true and still is that most millionaires are invested in real estate. They make their money in the real estate markets and the financial markets. And so just invest in that real estate. Get a mentor, go to a real estate investment group. There are lots of REAs, real estate investment associations in your neighborhood. So Google one, go to a meeting and start from there and go on.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Can I also ask about that? That's forward thinking, right, investment. Can you talk to how to get out of debt? You know, doesn't it start with that? How do you manage your finances first before you start trying to invest? Can you talk a little?
Yes, sir. Mr. Gilmore, you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's an excellent question because oftentimes we jump into different areas of investment and things of that nature but don't have our financial foundation in place. And certainly it is very important to have your you want to seek to be debt-free as much as possible. Now, I was listening to Brother Malcolm talking about investing in real estate, and certainly you do different things in terms of investing in real estate. So that is a little more difficult to be debt-free in all real estate because you're investing. When I say debt-free, I'm speaking more of the area of your credit cards, even vehicles, being able to purchase them outright versus financing. Because financing, paying interest to someone else, certainly keeps Uncle Sam and others in your pocket. And you want to be able to use your own money and have control. So first of all, seeking to be debt-free as much as possible. Secondly, having an emergency fund. You must have an emergency fund, and that is anywhere from 3 to 6 months of your monthly expenditures put away. So if anything happens, like we've experienced through the pandemic, people losing jobs, different things going on right now, they have to have something to lean on and cannot depend on the government and the stimulus. So having an emergency fund in place, at every financial plan, the base of that financial plan is life insurance. You got to have that in place. Because if you have the proper plan in place, and certainly when people are young, they can purchase a good, strong, permanent plan which builds cash. And the reason I'm saying that is that that enables you to become your own banker down the road. When you start becoming financially fit, it allows you to become your own banker, and you use your own money to do your financing. You don't have to borrow money to do the financing, so that you can pay cash for what you need and you just pay yourself back versus paying someone along with interest. And I'm jumping over things because it takes a little more to understand the ins and outs and the intricacies of what goes on and how to set it up. But these are main things in terms of setting your financial foundation before you even try to jump out and say, okay, I'm going to start investing. Because when you go into the market, for instance, we've seen the ups and downs. You can go into the market and you can lose just as you can gain. And so it doesn't give you stability, but you should have a certain percentage of monies in the market. And a lot of times people will do that through their 401k or whatever the case to get started. But then as you build your foundation, then you can stretch out a little more and do the other types of investing that are available that brings that financial strength, as Brother Malcolm was saying, regarding financial investments as well as real estate. Right now, there's other things, but I'll stop there.
Okay.
All right.
Which one else? Y'all, you want to bring them on?
Yeah. Let's see what.
Okay.
Any questions?
Caller, state your name and where you're calling from. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from. State your name and where you're calling from. Okay. Well, they just listening. They don't want to say anything. Okay, I'm going to let somebody else on, y'all.
Okay.
Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
I'm Reverend Cora Denise Stewart Lowe from Greenwood, Mississippi.
Can you hear me? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Can you hear me? Okay, and first of all, I'd like to commend you on the show. This is excellent. And what the last two speakers were saying are things that I think young people really need to hear. I have spoken to so many. I'm an educator by trade, and I'm a pastor by passion. I'm an AME minister. So many young people have lost the value in saving. And they don't understand that before you could do anything else, you need to develop a plan to save for yourself. I really like everything that those last two people said to them about, you know, developing wealth within your family. Another thing I just want to introduce is I read a book when I was raising my children, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that was when my eyes were open to the fact that in traditional schools, there isn't a lot of education on financing. And a lot of people, when they first get their first job, they don't have any concept. And I just wanted to say one other thing. When I was growing up, I, too, had an opportunity to spend time with my grandparents and my great-grandparents. And the one thing that my grandparents taught me that has taken me farther than anything else is you can catch more flies with honey than you can with vinegar. And when you're dealing in institutions that African Americans usually don't do a lot of dealing in, that's the first thing that I've learned. Establish a relationship with your financial institution, and they will help you. They will tell you things that normally they don't tell us that can carry you a long way. I really appreciated the fact that the young man said, build your own wealth and become your own banker. That is something that I have just, you know, really, really learned to do, and I'm teaching all of the young people in my family. And the other thing was we had a business growing up. Both of my parents were educators. And the one thing that my father did was he made all of us participate in running the business. As a matter of fact, I had my own first business, my own self, when I was 14. And he made me run it, and he made me manage it. And when he did that, it allowed me to see the value in having your own business, and I understood a lot of the things that he had taught me that I would not have understood had I not had that experience. So I as a teacher, although I was a language arts teacher, science teacher, I also taught my children that education is necessary, a job is necessary for stability, but in 5 to 10 years, you need to have a plan to start your own business. And like the young man said, real estate is one of the businesses that I have been encouraging my young people to go into. So your aunt, Marjorie Curtis, was the one who gave me the number, and I'm telling you,
okay,
I really.
I really appreciate you calling in today. Call in next week as well.
Okay.
All right. So I think we have maybe some questions from the young people on the panel. Any other questions you guys have?
Oh yes, this is Tyler. One of the biggest questions when I mentor myself and my current mentees that I have, they always ask, How do you get started? Like, what does your first year look like getting into the industry? And I try not to give them I'll give them my specific approach to dealing with my first year in the career this past year, but still try to get them to still be open-minded about what they will experience in a sense, because everyone's journey is different. So I can give you certain things that you may experience, but it just depends on who you're working for and what industry you choose to go into. So what is ideal in the first, year to 5 years in the business that you choose to go into? Like, what should that look like, or what should take place in regards to setting the foundation to the promotional track in your company, if you wish to stay on that side, or even if you choose to go entrepreneurial after such?
Okay, let's see. So you're speaking of an entrepreneurial venture or perhaps a company? Which one are you talking about?
Can you repeat?
I would just say that you're talking about the first few years of a business or the first few years of, say, corporate?
Corporate. First 2 years of you starting your first job.
Oh, starting your first job. Okay, okay.
That's an excellent question.
I'd like to chime in on that one. I'd like to chime in on that one as far as savings and so forth. One of the biggest things that you can do is watch that FICO score. Your credit score is so very important in order for you to build wealth and get to that point where you are your own bank. But until you reach that point, you're going to have to rely on debt. And gentleman earlier mentioned credit cards. It's good credit cards and bad credit cards. I should say good debt and bad debt. And so you want to make sure that your credit score, that FICO score that is so important, that is what's going to open up the door for you to obtain financing and leverage that financing into doing whatever you want to do in life and obtaining some things in life. And so you want to be aware of, again, good credit, paying your bills on time. And when you do get credit, it's a good idea to get credit that I warn you about the credit that's not good. Going out and buying $200 pair of Jordans or $200 pair of sneakers, excuse me, or jeans or $100 belt, things of this nature, that is bad credit. But buying a car is a depreciable asset, so not necessarily good credit. Not saying you don't go out and buy a car because you need one. But that's one thing. Second thing is invest in your company. If your company has a 401k program, then you want to invest in that, participate in that 401k program, because that's going to start you on a life of savings and investing right there. The best thing you can do is what you guys are doing right now, is educate yourself. I don't care whether it's about real estate, whether it's about stocks, whether it's about insurance or whatever, but you have to educate yourself on these matters. That financial literacy piece is so critical. That's the most critical piece that you can get into. And I want to throw this in. Pay the IRS. You don't want to wind up like a bunch of people that we know and have heard about in the press who have not paid the IRS and all of a sudden wind up in debt with the IRS. I'll let somebody else go from there.
Yeah, I want to say something on that too. You know, when I retired from the U.S. Postal Service, and what I did, I made my way up into management. And what I did, I took a lot of office courses. Jay, if you go getting into a company for the first time, check and see what they got to offer, what type of educational program they got to offer, like introduction to management, introduction to supervision. And they are office courses. Take them. They don't last that long. Take them. You know, and anything that you can do to help that company or get some knowledge. And the reason for that is not you want to get inside, okay? And the only way you're going to get inside of any type of company, you got to know what's going on, you know, with that company. That's my suggestion.
Okay.
Can I chime in on this?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, this is Ron Gilmore again. And I really appreciate what's been said, because it's so true. The education part is just key. And like the Council of Elders as well, being able to hear things that you may not get in a book necessarily. But what I wanted to say, as again, the Malcolm said about the good credit, bad credit, I agree with him 100%. And you need a car. You do. I agree with that. And you just, as he said, not wanting to finance Jordanaires or clothes and things, you can pay cash for those. And if people start their job in the corporate world, they in that they're typically making. Can you hear me? They're typically making so much more money than they would have made in college or have been making in college. So with that, if they were able to live off of 75% of their money, work
percentages. Live off of 75%. If you're in the church, you're going to pay your tithe 10%. You've got another 15% sitting there to work with. Part goes to your emergency fund. Part goes to pay yourself to put monies away. Part goes for you to enjoy. But with that, if you will discipline yourself in the beginning and always use those percentages, either 80% and put the other away, you will always have money. You will always have money. And you'll be able to then start building that financial wealth that you're looking at and can put your hands on cash right away when you need to. So it is important to build and build and start out right. And if you start out that way, you'll continue that way, because as your income increases, well, I'm just living off of 75 or 80% of that. The rest will go to me to put away to do what I need to do. So in doing that, practicing that discipline, that will help you to get ahead and have the cash you need to do the financing and different things you need to do as time goes on. Certainly it's not going to happen in the first month. But the first year, if you look at the end of the year and see what you've put away, you'd be amazed at what you've done. And then in that 401k, you generally get a match from most corporate 401. So if they're matching you 3%, you put in 3%, but that other amount that you thought you were going to put in, you let it work somewhere else for you.
Hey, guys, I have to apologize for keep jumping in, but I'm passionate about this. Go and read this book. No, you don't have to read it. You can download it on the podcast. But The Richest Man in Babylon by George Clason. The Richest Man in Babylon. And this concept that the gentleman just referred to is talked about over and over and over in The Richest Man, The Richest Man in Babylon. So read that book. Go ahead.
Yeah, Malcolm, like I said, I have read that book, and that book, if you do what that book says, then you will accumulate some wealth, you know, no matter what happens. But anyway, we've only got about another less than 10 minutes.
No, we got 17 minutes left on the show, and we got another caller. Let's let that caller in.
Okay.
All right. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from. Caller, state your name and where you're calling from.
Charles Woods, Knoxville, Tennessee. Can you hear me?
All right, Charles. How you doing?
Oh, great, man. How about you all?
All right.
Good, good. Great. Charles, how you doing, man?
Oh, great. Great show. Great show. And let me get, I guess I need to get a little bit of my background. I started out, got a BS in accounting, started out with MetLife, and then I went with the Tennessee Valley Authority. And then I got into the computer field and with Tennessee Valley Authority. And then after I retired, I got back into financial planning. But one of the things that I noticed, though, especially dealing with the black females, they believe in tithing, but they didn't want to save anything. They didn't save anything. I couldn't get them to understand that concept that, you know, you got to pay yourself. You got to always pay yourself now. You know, I mean, if you start off with 10, you got at least, you know, you need to start off at least with 5%, at least, or 6%, and work your way up to 10. And as you get regular increases, raises on your job, put that into that 401k or whatever the saving plan that you have. But the latest, they believed in the tithing, but they didn't believe in the other part of it. And that was the part that I used to run into. That was a big problem I ran into with dealing with the black female. And but it seems like now, though, they have really turned things around, because the black females are kind of running everything now. If you look around, they are really doing well. So let's get that. Let's preach that concept to the ladies and stuff too, because they need to know how to save, and make sure you pay yourself. First thing, you got to pay yourself 10%. I mean, you got to pay yourself 10% if you want to have something. And then as you gain more raises and things like that, you don't have that money, so you don't need to worry about that money. Once you get it, just save, put it in your savings. And like I said, the 401ks, before the 401ks came along, I didn't probably have anything. And then they got me to start saving with that 401k. And it was amazing what you can accomplish. And really, when you first start off working, if you start putting that money weight in, it builds up over time and stuff like that. See, a lot of us, we don't start putting money in until we get old, and then you don't have the time for that money to turn over as much. But if you start putting it in, time you start working, that money will grow, and you can become a millionaire. You really can become a millionaire just by doing it. Time you start working, don't. First thing we want to do, go out and get debt. You don't need all that. Just put some money away, and over the time. Mm-hmm. Period of time, because that time is a major factor in that in money. And you got to have that time and let it turn and turn and keep turning and keep investing. Hey, you can retire. You can get that to when you hit 65 or whatever, you're able to retire or whatever, or retire early. I retired at 50. I was about 51. I hadn't hit 51. So you can retire early if you put your money and stuff away. But you got to have some discipline and stuff like that, and sometimes you have to put that money away so you can't get to it, because most of us, if we can get to it, we're gonna go back and get it when we need something. And a lot of times, if you got that money away from you, and let it grow, or you'll be amazed at what you can accomplish. And then you can get into the investing these other things and doing all that. And you, like I said, you definitely need life insurance because you're going to, you never know what may happen to you. So you need to have that part of it, it's amazing what we can accomplish if we just start early and over the period of time and watch it grow. Thank you.
All right,
Very well said.
Very well said. Mr. Jensen, I would like to ask the younger people on your panel a question. Are you guys going into the communities and becoming role models to the rest of the young people into the community? Because I heard you guys talk and look like you guys are just brilliant, man. I'm talking about brilliant. The communities right now, it need people like you guys. So are you guys going into the communities and picking up people and putting them under your arms and say, man, I'm going to help you, I'm going to help you go through this? You know, they need y'all.
This is Lucian speaking. Go ahead, Tyler.
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, as far as community, I have a large family, and a lot of the family are younger than me now. So what I do is really I just try to be a role model to my younger cousins, my younger siblings, and that's honestly stretching up and down the East Coast. And then, of course, they have, like, some of their peers that I'll interact with, and just trying to be the best that I can be. So they have somebody to look up to, and they have questions. And, of course, I'll, give them the rundown. Just information and knowledge that has been passed down to me. As far as outside of that, I do go back to, like, career fairs. Just kind of talk to upcoming graduates or just those in the position that I was in, when I was going through college. So those are things that I do.
And this is Tyler speaking. I'm a firm believer in whatever community that I inhabit to reach back and uplift the next fellow person of the society. And so when I moved from Baltimore down to, while growing up in Baltimore, I did programs at the local HBCUs for engineering. So they poured into me to, when I get to the stage to graduate high school, to make sure that I do the same thing for whichever college that I choose to go to. And so moving to Atlanta, Georgia to go to Clark Atlanta University, in the midst of there, our motto is culture for service. And so
they also reaffirmed the need to give back to the community through different aspects and community programs. And we also chartered Collegiate 100 of 100 Black Men of America, me being one of the charter members. And so from there, we mentored students in the local neighborhood about, one, education, two, graduating with your high school diploma and then going to college, and then more so just to speak to the educational realm, that there is not a lot of us as Black males in the early childhood education system to for us to look up to in a sense when going to school. So one of the caveats to the program was trying to gear them to go into the educational realm when going to college as their major. And then upon transferring over to A&T, it was a rough little transfer from one HBCU to the next, but figuring and finding my way throughout the institution, me and my cousin started a mentoring program of our Department of the College of Engineering, and out of that, I've gained 7 mentees of similar interests of my background, and so we talk during the regular school year every week, sort of gauge their mind, whatever topics from life, to cooking, to business, to finances, like we're talking about now. So I give back in that sense, and then they upon go back to their own respective communities and talk with their friends and decimate out that way. So, but great question. And it is one thing that us as our community do need to do just a little bit more or put a little bit more effort into is sharing our pitfalls or our successes, not in a boastful way, but in a learning way, so that others won't either make those mistakes or can learn how to improve and innovate what we've already done so that we all can be better in the end.
That's right. Okay, guys, I just want to come in again,
if I could. To the young people, are any of you all into any type of intellectual properties like video games or writing books? The lady earlier mentioned Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Kawasaki, and this guy wrote this book 20 years ago, and he's still making millions off of it, and it's still a Bible somewhat of to a lot of people. But are any of you all into intellectual properties? Are any of y'all doing any coding, a.k.a. Robert Smith with Vista? That's his big thing, coding. And just wondering about coding, are you learning that? Are you doing any of that so you can develop some intellectual property that will last you a lifetime, provide a lifetime of income for you?
Yes, sir. I would say being introduced currently now to, you know, certain levels of, you know, version control, it's there are ways to, you know, store, you know, programs, you know, later versions or earlier versions of, you know, any programs that were written previously onto a server. And, you know, people you work with, they could go ahead and pull, you know, older versions down if they needed, or if you're working on a big project or anything of that nature, you can, you know, go about doing it. But as far as coding, a little bit of maybe Python and, you know, Swift, you know, is based on Apple. So,
Right. Now, you know, that's all Greek to me, Python or whatever, but that's the reason I'm here, so I can learn from you guys about that. I'm going to learn something.
Python.
Yes, sir.
It's the name of a coding software.
Yes, there's a couple of them.
So Justin, can I chime in here for a sec? This is Shedrick.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
So, I just want to go back to, I think Tyler's question, and I'm assuming everyone's still in college or soon out. You touched on what to expect the first couple of years in industry, and so being in the industry in the engineering realm, I think there's two different types. I did a little time internships with Hewlett Packard, and so that was kind of the industry type of things. But ultimately, I ended up going to NASA, which is a federal agency, so it's government. And that has a little bit of difference. But I know Frank, who works at Lockheed Martin, you know, has probably a different experience there too. But at least for my first 3 years, I just can't tell you enough how important it is to find a mentor. If you're not already assigned one, get one, make one. That's the whole learn how to learn concept. I've seen in my time that I would sit and given a lot of paperwork to do. You know, a lot of times they don't have a project necessarily for you, so you're reading the policies, the way that that business does things. It's kind of mundane a little bit. But also at NASA, they had a ATP program, advanced training program. And what that allowed you to do within the first six months, you became kind of a chameleon. You just took on a lot of different – they paired you up with someone. And at that time, I paired up on three different projects, doing a little bit of a lot of things, big projects, small projects, little of big assignments. And then you just became a sponge. And after 6 months, you got a promotion out of it, as well as you were on a fast track. And so that's what I would – but I've seen so many times, which is, you know, I'm from a family of educators, and I have mentoring in my blood. And I found so many times that a person's career lives and dies by who they get paired up with at that time. We're engineers. We're not necessarily designed to have the soft skills or the mentoring aspects. And so you got to find that and kind of protect yourself. Because I've seen people who had good mentors and they just took off. And I've had other people who had bad mentors who were just by name only, that just gave you busy work. They weren't investing in your time and your experiences. And that person just got, you know, just got sidewalled. And ended up just losing heart and trying, you know, going and leaving the company. So just protect yourself. Just be a sponge those first few. Don't, you know, that's the government world. There's a very, very simple track. You know, my dad always told me, he was military. He said, yeah, you got a government job. It's cushy, you know. You don't really have to do much. It's not, they don't have a bottom dollar, you know, to, or investment number to meet. So it's not like cut and dry as, are cutthroat as it is maybe in industry, but there's a lot of learning opportunities and stretch out. Just get out of your chair, go. I can't stand, the engineer thinks they're better than the technician. The technician has years of experience and hands-on and work together on your design so that ultimately all parts become a better design. So those are few tip points that I could say in those first 3 years. It's really critical to get your name out there. And just like this whole conversation started, I would follow up with, there's definitely a make sure your people, you know who you are. It's very important to say that it's important to know who other people are, but it's just important that people are watching you, whether you know it or not. And it's just as important that they know who you are, because they'll help you without your knowledge. People will pull you up. So get to know people and make sure people know you.
All right. Well, with that said, that was very powerful. We only have a minute and I would say 50 seconds left on the show. And Mr. Jansen, please close us out.
All right. Well, it's very, very good show today. We had a North Carolina A&T connection today, so we got a few connections there. Gentlemen, I'm really glad and excited that you join us today, and we do this every Saturday, so you can always tune in the same time, same station, same number. But I just like to say a word of prayer for everybody. Let's ask the Lord to bless everybody in these trying times. You guys stay safe. I ask you, in Jesus' name, for everyone in the sound of my voice to be anointed and be blessed and be able to bless someone else. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. And with that, I will end the show. But tell a friend about the show. Keep the number. And tune in next week, and we'll have another interesting show. I think maybe next week we'll be talking about further on communications. So.
All right.
That's the end of the show today.
I wanted to – go ahead. I'm sorry. We got 20
go ahead,
seconds left. And I wanted to let everybody know that Uplifting Communities Talk Show, we're going to be doing a special with the Vietnam veterans. Okay, I am a Vietnam veteran. I am a combat veteran. and I do have a Purple Heart, Bronze Star, and other medals. And we're doing a special. It's supposed to be this Thursday. Y'all tune in. Look, take a look at your Facebook, and definitely we're going to be doing the special, the Vietnam Veteran Special. With that said, everybody have a good day.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.